Hello and welcome to The Stack. On this week's show, we'll play you some of the Stack highlights from 2020. In fact, I've chosen interviews with editors of new publications. Even in a bit of a turmoil year, there's been plenty of new print for you. Enjoy the show. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Well, I sincerely hope you've enjoyed The Stack this year. As always, it's been such a pleasure hosting the show and see the power of magazines. The print industry is resilient, and it shows. Just look at the amazing lineup of guests we had on the show this year. And this is a bit of a best-of show with the best interviews this year, but I decided to only choose the new publications that were found in 2020. There's been plenty of good stories. We have an online paper moving to print in South Africa, a new architecture title from New Zealand, and a super cool new design title. But we start in South Africa. This is a very exciting story. The Daily Maverick was founded by Branko Birkic, and it is a fiercely independent South African online daily. In 2020, the title became available in print. It is called Daily Maverick 168, and is made in their newsrooms in both Johannesburg and Cape Town. Here is Branko telling me more about their move to print and his fascinating story. He started as a publisher of sci-fi books in Yugoslavia.
Well, I was a book publisher in Yugoslavia, and that was started in 1984, and by published in science fiction books. And by 1991, it was the biggest privately owned publishing house in Yugoslavia. And you know, in 1989, 1990, 1991 were horrible years for Yugoslavia, and eventually I was drafted in a civil war and decided that that was it for me. I saw the country change around me and change into country which was basically talking about war and madness and hatred rather than talking about living together, and that was not the place in which I could remain. So I I refused to go to war against my brothers, my Croatian brothers, and basically my only choice was to leave the country. And so I left the country, and I ended up in South Africa for several reasons. One of them, somebody told me that after Mandela was released, that the country is opening up and it will be an interesting place to be in. And also, to be honest, I could get a visa. Because, you know, when you're running out of the country, which is in the middle of the civil war, you don't have much choice. You know, beggar can't really be a chooser. So ended in South Africa, and I learned to love this country a lot over the years, and this is my home over the last 30 years.
Well, and that's really beautiful to hear. I mean, it's so much of your home. You know, you decided, you know, to launch this platform, the Daily Maverick, which I know exists since 2009. So tell us about the Daily Maverick. How does it fit into the South African press for those who perhaps don't know much about it? Are you guys political? Do you have a political side, or you're very much kind of independent? I'm just curious, as I don't know much about kind of the press in South Africa.
Yeah, we are fully independent. So before Daily Maverick, there was a magazine called Maverick. And Maverick and Empire were my previous expressions of my publishing ethos. And they ran from 2005 and 2008. And then in 2008, the crisis came, and we would not, we just didn't have enough cash to survive the crisis. And we went under. So Daily Maverick was basically born on the ashes of Maverick magazine. And to be honest, you know, I started Daily Maverick in 2005, and it was supposed to be a sort of high-end business magazine that had quite a few touches of Vanity Fair and, please don't laugh, Top Gear magazine. I'm a big fan of what Jeremy Clarkson did for publishing and for media. And it worked well for a while. It was a great magazine, and you would be surprised to hear how many people still have full sets of Maverick magazines all these years later, except we couldn't make it work commercially. you know, we became a bit of a cult magazine, but we didn't become commercially successful. So it all ended up pear-shaped. Towards the end of that 3 years existence of Maverick magazine, it became much more of a political magazine rather than a business magazine. And you know, on the other hand, in South Africa, everything is politics. So it's very difficult to even talk about just about anything without entering the realm of politics within a few minutes. You know, so when Daily Maverick was created, the idea was to bring quality journalism online, you know, which was very much a novelty in those days, especially. And again, the idea was to you know, maybe do something which was slightly deeper than Huffington Post, but the idea was to, you know, to try to cover the country and what's going on in the country, especially in the political scene, to the best of our ability. Over the time, we kind of became more of a slate-like publication. And then again, after a couple of more years, we became, we added investigative capability to our publication. We added a couple of more sections. So today we are basically a national online publication with around 4 million readers every month. And, you know, we pride ourselves in calling ourselves the premium publication. And, you know, we are basically the only independent of those big publications. And we don't belong to any big media house. We don't belong to the government. And we are proud of it, and we maintain our independence quite jealously, and we intend to continue doing so.
And Bronco, which city are you based again?
Look, we are based wherever we have internet connection. we are based in Cape Town in Johannesburg. So we got two offices. We got around 80 employees right now. We publish every day anything between 40 and 50 features. We don't do kind of short news journalism. We do basically the first draft of history type of journalism. So our stories in principle are the definitive drafts of what's important today, what does it mean, and what does it mean in the future. And we have a large group of network contributors as well all over the world. So we have outside of our 80 employees, we got around 200 contributors all over the world who contribute regularly to us. And we became quite big in the meantime.
And Branko, tell us about this move to print as well, which is quite interesting. You started as an online newspaper, but then it's interesting that you found kind of a space and perhaps the need as well to have a week print content as well. Explain to us, how does it work? Is it kind of a weekly thing? And then there's a different name as well. Is it called Daily Maverick 168?
Yes, it's called Daily Maverick 168. A lot of people ask me why 168. It's very simple. That's the number of hours in the week. You know, it's 21st century. We live by the hour, not by the day or by the week. There's also another reason is, you know, when you launch your publications, as always, the important thing is to stand out. You know, so when you launch a weekly or weekend publications, so you either have weekly something else, or you got Saturday something, or you got Sunday something. You know, what we have is 168, so you automatically stand out. You know, and by people asking why 168, they remember it, they don't forget it, and then you know they see it in a crowd, you know, of newspapers. So it's just our way to attract attention as well, and also, you know, we also want to be clear that we stand out and that we are not like the others. You asked me about why. Look, every environment, every media environment in the world has its own peculiar challenges, you know. And in South Africa, you know, challenges are massive. South African market is extremely small. South Africa is an extremely poor country. The media market has been for a long, long, long time controlled by four big private corporations and the South African Broadcasting Corporation. And it was not a market which was essentially developing or innovating, you know. And so what happened as a result of it, the print quality suffered, you know. So over the years, apart from the fact that the internet was gobbling up everything and that Google and Facebook gobbled up all the advertising money on the internet and it was not replaced in paper, apart from that fact that you know, the readership was dropping in print, you know, and apart from the fact that, I mean, daily newspapers, you know, the print is really not a good medium for distributing information these days, unfortunately, on a daily basis, because it's just too slow. You know, apart from that, South Africa had this really major problem of the ever decreasing quality of coverage, especially in print. So, you know, we believe that on one side you got this decline, which is, as I said, you know, it's just unfortunately defined by the fact that in the, you know, the electronic publications are faster and quite often cheaper. But on the other hand, we believe that the issue is also quality. So we believe that if we introduce the quality into print in South Africa, and the only print that we really feel is realistic would be a weekly print, that we can arrest the decline and we can actually quite comfortably have a commercially successful quality publication coming out every Saturday morning. You know, and you know, we are blessed with a problem that many other publishers would love to be blessed with. I hope that we produce so much content on a continuous basis that our biggest problem is what to leave out of our print publication rather than how to fill the empty pages. Yeah, so we, you know, started 168 as a high quality Saturday morning publication. And but we also included quite a few innovations that I'm more than happy to talk to you about.
Well, that's fantastic news and such a nice welcome, you know, to the South African newsstands and to your subscribers as well. And I was looking at the stories. I find it fascinating, really good quality, because as you know, there is this song Jerusalem, which is doing very well all over the world, in here in Europe as well. And there was a lovely profile of a singer, Nonsebo Zikade, on your newspaper. And I find it's quite interesting. I think, you know, even non-South Africans would be quite interested to check it out, the Daily Maverick. Wouldn't you say so?
Look, what we're trying to do very clearly, and we're trying to maintain the world-class quality, you know, of South African journalism, our journalism. And quite a few things that we do are all the world-class. And, you know, just to give you an example, our cartoonists, one of our cartoonists, Zapiro, I can, you know, hand on heart say that he's one of the three best in the world. The fact that we are, you know, at the bottom of the world, you know, in today's globe that shrunk over the years, you know, it kind of enables us to start, you know, producing stuff that could be interesting for the people outside of South Africa as well. On the other hand, you know, for us to remain credible and interesting to South African readers, of course, we need to be also intensely local. So it's a combination of the two, you know. So some of our columns are really, really good and, you know, could easily be published in any of the global newspapers. And again, Jerusalem is just one of the good examples, but we have quite a few. We got Maverick Life insert, which is also high quality. And, you know, so we're trying to beat the competition by being very, very good. You know, we're not trying to do anything which is, you know, unfair or indecent or, you know, any other things. We're just trying to do good journalism.
That was Branko Birkić from the Daily Maverick. And for more information, go to their website, dailymaverick.co.za. And now to the world of design, to another title that arrived on the newsstands in 2020. Under the banner of Designing for Dignity, Ding Journal is a new US-based print title encouraging its global readers to rethink the world of design and open the conversation up around it to a much broader audience. This dialogue is explored through beautiful visuals and clever journalism in a meticulously produced printed title that launched this year. Two of its founders, Nu Gauthier and Alice Candois, spoke to Monocle's design editor, Nolan Giles, about the title.
The backstory of Deem, really the background of Deem is our attempt to democratize and start to rethink the world of design. So moving away from just initially the outputs of design, so which would be like graphic design, industrial design, and moving into the space of design where it's more from the world of how can we add value. right? Finding means and spaces and places to add value. And then us exploring that, we realized that a lot of design-based conversations are usually had with practitioners. And those practitioners are usually very specific. They're usually white males who are saying, hey, here are things that we've created for everyone else to consume. But when you think about the act of adding value, anyone can add value, and they add value in many different interesting and innovative ways, but those people don't always have a platform or a means to be able to share their values or even consider what they're doing as a framework or consider what they're putting out there as a design solution. It's just something that's innate in them. And so our goal was to really highlight and start to explore different ways that design is happening at a practical level from communities and from different people who may not identify as designers, with the goal to inspire other people to understand their power within the design world.
So maybe we'll actually delve into the publication, which I do have here. And like you say, you know, I mean, reading your first kind of key interview with Adrienne Marie Brown, the word design is not even mentioned, I think, until kind of halfway through. You are kind of, I guess, redefining for, say, a general design reader like myself, perhaps, what design really can be. So perhaps if you could maybe take us through that first interview and let us know how it kind of sets the tone for the whole issue.
So essentially, what we're interested in doing, and most specifically with centering this first issue around Adrienne Marie Brown, is that we're interested in moving beyond traditional design conversations. And so while objects and architecture are part of this larger category, we're very much interested in human interaction and activity, and really its essential function throughout the design process. And so for our cover choice, we found it important to highlight the work of a Black woman design doer, as we like to call it, who's offering really a contemporary design ideology with cultural references and an accompanying toolkit. Her framework of emergence felt most relevant during this issue because it outlines the practice for how we can really understand and adapt to our complex and ever-shifting interdependent patterns that really comprise our realities. As you mentioned, quite frankly, Adrienne didn't even really identify herself as a designer prior to our interview. And basically within the context of our conversation last summer in Detroit, she had an aha moment where she realized that she too is a designer. And so really, I think this ethos really embodies what we're looking to do with Deem, where we're really trying to kind of bring more people into this conversation and help people understand that, like, Deem and design is for everyone that might be active in this idea of like the daily practice of social transformation.
And I guess in terms of look and feel, it's in conventional design terms, it is a beautiful thing. You know, you've got incredible graphic design. The reproduction is amazing. You've worked with some very talented illustrators and photographers here to bring this whole thing together. Can you take us through the editorial tone, I guess, visually?
Yeah, so the visual system that we were playing around with was a balance between structure and energy. And on one end, we needed structure in order to be able to validate the work that we're doing, right? So that we're not coming off too whimsical. There's a lot of key topics that just needed that rigidity and that support. So almost pulling from the world of academia, almost pulling from the world of journalism to be able to have something that was consistent, that when you looked at it, it wasn't going to be so whimsical that it didn't do the content justice. But then on the other end, like the energy side was us really looking for where are those pops of color and excitement that allows us to expand past an academic journal, that allows us to start to bring in more people, that can actually entice people to come into our design language. And so throughout many different touch points, our goal was always to make design as practical as possible and as approachable as possible. So we find moments where we dial between structure and energy, and whether it's photography or is use of different typefaces or is use of color in an unorthodox way, we're very mindful that everything is in support of the content.
And just finally, you know, you're dealing with serious subjects in the title, but at the same time, you know, you're presenting things in a very joyous way with, you know, we talked about the photography and the design and the storytelling. Projects like this obviously involve a lot of passion to get them over the line, as I'm sure you guys can attest to. I'd love to just hear, you know, how much fun doing a project like this is and, you know, how much passion is involved, and maybe a little bit about the team beyond you guys that have helped put it together.
Deem is so much fun. It is the most fun that I've had maybe all of my life. all of my life. I mean, for one, we're very thankful to have this platform. It's our baby, as we like to refer to it, our Los Angeles baby. Mm-hmm. We have an amazing team, a small team, but an amazing team of people that are also passionate about social transformation, that are interested in design, may not be deemed traditional designers, but are very much interested in these processes. And so we just we'd love to have a good time. I mean, one of my fondest memories actually is of the day that New and I went to the USC campus to interview Milton Curry. And we just had, you know, we were having a serious conversation with him, but there was always spaces for joy and laughter, which is quite revolutionary and radical in these crazy, crazy times that we're living in. On the editorial side, we have a small team, which is basically comprised of myself, our editor Isabel Flower, and our researcher Alexis. We kind of try to keep it nimble, but then also as well try to bring in a variety of voices and perspectives through our commissioning process. You know, a big part of it is that we are, you know, this is like a platform for knowledge production, but also sharing. And so through all of these processes or through all of these stories, there's just a really beautiful exchange. You know, we're doing our research. We maybe know a few things about design, but we're also still learning through our subjects and the people that we're speaking with. And so I think that that's just such a joy. It's just such a joy to kind of have a platform like that.
Yeah.
I'll let you kind of speak to the creative team.
We have such an intergenerational team to the point where I'll make a reference that I think it's a common reference and then realize like, oh, like you don't know that reference because you didn't grow up with it. So I mean, from
our short age a little
yeah.
bit. I mean, there are some of our first moments experiencing this actually.
And which is, it's awesome. But I mean, also in terms of the leadership, you have Alice, I, and then there's also our other partner, Marquise. And so we work together to just start to think about, okay, what is this platform? How do we move this platform forward and bring together all of our networks? And then from the creative side, you have George, who works as the super producer across everything and make sure that everything is running in tip-top shape. We have Sarah, who's the photo director. And then we have Cody, who is the actual visual designer who laid out this beautiful publication by himself and did it in record time and was the most professional and the youngest person on the team.
That was Nugo Te and Alice Grandois from Dean Journal. Issue 1 is out now. And finally in the show, we have yet another new title in the newsstand. This time, a beautiful new architecture publication from New Zealand. The name is Here, and it's edited by Simon Farrell Green. The title will look at local architecture in the country, and Simon also reveals to me the New Zealand taste when it comes to their houses, and how the country is still in love with print.
So I was the editor until April of an architecture and design magazine here in New Zealand, and as lockdown hit, a number of magazines closed in New Zealand, including one very large publishing company that I worked for. So something like sort of 25 magazines closed in the space of a week, most of them owned by two companies. And that seemed like an overreaction to me. I could understand that maybe the business didn't look good for a multinational corporate publisher, but the business of the magazine seemed quite solid to me anyway. And it seemed to me that the readers were desperate to read something. So we just decided to go out and make a new magazine and see how it went. And it's gone really, really well.
Yeah, I was going to ask, I mean, how has it been the reception so far? Of course, you started at the beginning with funding and the response was amazing as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, New Zealanders are big magazine readers. So per capita, New Zealand has, or traditionally until April, had more magazines per capita than most countries in the world. And we still love the printed sort of magazine, which I think sort of speaks to our need of, or our need to sort of retreat and relax. We're sort of, you know, all the cliches about New Zealanders are true. So that was one thing. And then we sort of found ourselves in a slightly sticky position just before we launched of not having quite enough money to feel really confident about it, and particularly about launching, you know, a digital presence and things. So we launched a crowdfunding campaign here, and the results were phenomenal. We raised nearly 30,000 New Zealand dollars, which was more than enough to make us feel really sort of quite happy about going to print. So, and then from there, it's just carried on. The sales are really good. The subscriptions are picking up really nicely. The support is very much there.
And I think it's very clever that the magazine is, I mean, at least in the launch issue, very much dedicated to local New Zealand architecture. I think it's clever because, you know, of course, I'm sure it has a great audience there in New Zealand, but people are interested in things made in New Zealand. I think it's a country that, especially this year, proved to the world that, like, oh my God, good things are happening to this country. They're dealing well with the crisis. They have an interesting and a good prime minister, and other among other things.
Yeah, I mean, we're not seeing huge international subscriptions picking up yet. We've had a few. We do offer them. There's no wide-scale distribution of the magazine internationally yet. That is something we're going to look at probably next year, once sort of the world settles down a little bit and maybe people have got a bit more time to listen to us. But yeah, I mean, New Zealanders are interested in New Zealand as well. I think that's the other thing is, you can get any level of content from anywhere in the world now. And so really the thing that we were determined to tell was New Zealand stories, because we felt that if we didn't take that opportunity, then no one would. So you're right, telling local stories about local architects and local houses is absolutely at the core of the DNA. We would never sort of back off that.
And there's some lovely houses in the magazine as well. One of my favorites was the story of I think Jack McKinney's house in Auckland. I mean, that looks fantastic as well. I mean, can you tell us about some of the highlights of the issue, perhaps even that Jack McKinney house there?
Oh, of course. Look, I mean, we called the issue Come Home, and that was very much a post-COVID idea. Magazines weren't allowed to publish or distribute here in New Zealand under lockdown, so we had to wait until a few weeks after that was lifted to sort of get on sale. And there was a sense of, I think, celebration but also trepidation in the country, so we wanted to create a warm enclosing magazine that really spoke to the idea of home, because people have still sort of, you know, they are still very much sticking around home and feeling very much like they need to feel safe. And so we had a total mix of houses, and I think that's one thing that we try to do, is rather than theming the issue quite strongly around, you know, ideas of city houses or small houses or, you know, houses at the beach, which I think is what traditional architecture magazines have done, we felt that there needed to be much more of an emotional reaction to the magazine. So we have a beautiful house by an architect called Jack McKinney, as you've referred to, which is concrete, raw, off-form concrete and lots of steel and glass, and it's very glamorous and it has some beautiful furniture in it. But then we also have a house in Christchurch down in the south of the country, where it was designed by two young architects themselves, one to live in, one to rent. It's a little townhouse complex, and they built it for very little, and it has plywood and polycarbonate and corrugate, and it's very, very simple but very colourful and very joyous and expressive. And both of those sort of two projects at either end felt like lovely ideas of what home could be in a new era.
That was Simon Farrell-Green, and the first issue of Here is out now. Well, that's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Nora Hall. And if you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fp@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. And of course, you can always listen to it again at monocle.com or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud. And before we go, a little song for you. Tina Turner, Simply the Best. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Until next time, it's goodbye from me. I call you.